So, starting today and for the next few months, with a little brief hiatus to hopefully see quite a few of you in person who I'm able to see in Europe in August, these monthly Zoom meetings will focus on what would have been the subject and focus of the retreat in Switzerland in August. Which we'll have to postpone till next July, and such is life in the pandemic. But these next few months, we can explore this. Mysticism in the Anthropocene was the frame, and I'd like to focus on exploring this, hopefully in depth. I feel like in truth, I'll probably be exploring this for the rest of my life because this is the time we live in. So perhaps each retreat will be Mysticism in the Anthropocene, part 1 through 50, if I live that long. So it'll just be a constant running joke of what it means to be a mystic at this time, constantly having to adapt and evolve and change. But what I would like to do, at least today, is perhaps offer an overview frame of what does it mean to be a mystic at this time? What is asked of us? What is needed? How the path has evolved and will continue to change and evolve in response to the times we live in? And also, what is our responsibility and role as mystics at this time? And this is not, of course, a new subject. This is something I've spoken about for many years. My father spoke about this for many years. We're going through a great shift, the largest shift in the history of humanity. So much is falling away and will continue to fall away. And it will be a very, very, very challenging time, to say the least, of which this last 15 months has been just a taste. And I'd like to focus on two areas today. And the first is, what is required of a mystic at this time in order to make the journey home, to return to truth, to go through the process of fana, and if you are lucky, if we are lucky, Baka, and complete the possibility of this evolutionary journey, this mystical journey in this life, regardless of what the outer circumstances are, regardless of the challenges that we will be facing are. And the second is, what is the possibility for a contribution during this time? What is the role and responsibility of a mystic at this time of breakdown and falling away? And how can the mystic help seed the next evolution of humanity in the future that lies before us, perhaps not in our own lifetimes, but the lifetimes of our children or our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren? Because we have to start thinking in those terms. And if we are not, we are being delusional. Because the cycle of change is so great and the future so unstable and uncertain that to hold on to fantasies of things changing in our lifetime and it all being okay at the end of the rainbow are, I think, naive at best. And both strands, this strand of what the mystic needs to do in order to make the journey home, and how we can contribute at this time, I think they both require a sense, a realistic sense of what is unfolding and a sober, realistic sense of what is unfolding. And I think this last 15, 16 months of the pandemic has perhaps opened all of our eyes a little wider to what is. What is unfolding around us, to how fragile our society is, how fragile our systems are. And I know some of you have experienced it differently. Some of you have experienced a much harsher version of the pandemic than others. Some of you are still in the throes of it and in lockdown again in Melbourne, or dealing with such tragedy in Brazil, or the situation in South Africa. And in America, things after a very, very, very challenging time have started to get better. But regardless of what our experience has been, I think all of us have opened our eyes a bit more. And perhaps what might have been a conceptual understanding of the fragility of our civilization and everything that goes with that is now something we've experienced more directly. Because I think most of us, I'm sure some of you have had the experience through your work or through experiences, to firsthand witness the impacts of the changes we're going through globally. You know, you've seen the impacts of climate change, you've seen the devastation it causes, you've experienced it firsthand, but most of us have not, you know, because most of us are in positions of privilege and quite removed from the impacts that those, you know, at the front line, so to speak, have been experiencing for decades. And that has started to change. You know, here in California, we've experienced these wildfires for many years now, and the smoke engulfing our lungs each fire season. It gives you a physical sensation of what is happening in a way that is much more potent than reading about it. For those in Australia who witnessed the terrible fires and experienced those fires and the loss of 1 billion living beings, and the forests and the smoke that drifted across southern Australia and choked your lungs, you know the same experience. It is not something you can easily forget. And there are instances in Europe and England as well, not as extreme yet, but they will come. But the pandemic opened our eyes in a way that we hadn't had an experience like that. It was very potent. So I think now we can look more realistically at what is it like to experience a disruption and actually understand what that means and how much can shift in a few days or a few hours. How what one took for granted is no longer something you can take for granted. How you can become isolated and no longer able to be in community. All of these experiences, they are again just, I think, the beginning of what will be unfolding. Yes, things will get better slowly for a few years, you know, in the next few years in response to the pandemic, unequally, of course, as we experience now so directly how the wealthier countries are vaccinating everyone and the less wealthy countries are struggling to get the vaccines. I mean, it's going to be a long road of recovery. We now know what it is like to experience this disruption. And now, perhaps over these last 15 months in relation to your own spiritual journeys, you have a sense of what might have been taken away that you took for granted or you relied on, whether that was coming together as a group, to be on retreat together, to be able to be in the company of friends as you do your practice. Those are things that now you've experienced, perhaps in a way you hadn't before. Maybe you got a sense of what it was like to deal with a sense of anxiety that gripped the world and your own life, and how hard it was to continue your practice in the midst of that. These are things that you now have a taste of, and perhaps you also get a sense of what is required of you to respond to that perhaps that commitment and dedication to one's practice, the perseverance that is required, is no longer, again, you know, just an ideal to strive towards as a seeker on the journey towards truth, but something that you know you need if you are going to stay the course and not be swayed hither and thither by the energies that are so gripping at times of unrest like this. You know, the mystic is not, throughout history, isolated from world affairs and world events that have caused great upheaval in the past. Mystics have always been affected by great change. You know, I've often given the example of Genghis Khan. That was a big one in the history of mysticism and Sufism. You know, the war in Afghanistan killed thousands and thousands of Sufis, many Naqshbandis. Some tariqas completely wiped out. Mystics have been in the throes of unrest and war and disruption since there were first mystics, because that is also the story of human evolution and human civilizational growth and change. But this is different. And in some ways, it won't be as extreme and dramatic as the hordes of Genghis Khan sweeping down the plains, or the Russians in Afghanistan. It will be a slow burn, a slow series of changes and challenges and disruptions, punctuated by larger ones like the one we just experienced. And our iPhones will still be working during this whole process. And for the most part, you may still be able to get food and have a roof over your head and continue your job and raise your children and go to work. All those things will continue while this great unraveling goes on and on and on for these coming decades. But just because you're not dealing with the hordes of Genghis Khan, or, you know, the threat of your life from an army, or like all the many tens of thousands of monks and nuns in Tibet, you know, the communist destroying sanctuaries of prayer and sanctuaries of spiritual practice, we aren't going to be dealing with that. But the challenge of being able to hold one's focus, of being aligned inwardly in the midst of this change, is in some ways just as hard. It's just the conditions are different. You know, it's like in the past, there may have been tremendous challenges that swept the world, but the world was not a completely toxic space, environmentally and spiritually, in the way it is now. So some things are easier and some things are harder. And the times we live in present a very specific set of challenges for the spiritual seeker. You know, it isn't just an age of distraction because of phones and technology and materialism and capitalism and all those other isms that have run awry. But, you know, it is the impact of an age of forgetfulness that spawned those isms that makes it so hard for the mystic. You know, because in the past, you know, there was still a recognition and respect for the sacred in all its forms, in the midst of all that turmoil that swept the world. But that age is gone. And we are dealing with tremendous challenges while not having a foundation to stand on in the way that we did before. And even in my lifetime, in your lifetime, that has changed and become harder and harder and harder as what remnants of the sacred were there have been swept away. Just very few pockets remain. And so the mystical journey unfolds within this space that offers very little reflection, very little foundation. And more and more and more is put on you. More and more responsibility is put directly on you in a way it wasn't before. Yes, ultimately, you are always responsible for your own mystical journey, because without your contribution, then you cannot make the steps needed. Yes, much is given through the tradition, much is given through the teacher, but ultimately you have to, as I've talked about many, many, many times, you know, you have to do the work. But now you have to do this work without the same support outwardly and inwardly than you had before. That is one of the fundamental realities of what it is to be a mystic in the age of the Anthropocene. You are not going to have the same support as you have had before in previous lifetimes, in previous incarnations. It is different now. And I've spoken about this repeatedly over and over again for years. How important it is that you take the responsibility on directly yourself, not being reliant on anybody, because that anybody can be taken away, just like it was. Which is why for years I've said, do not be reliant on a group of other people coming together, even as friends to pray and meditate. You cannot rely on that to be a place of attention that you align yourself with. That place of attention, that place of focus, that has to be within yourself. Because if you're reliant on some structure and some form that can easily be taken away in this time, then it will be very, very hard for you. And so the self-reliance, this acceptance of self-reliance is key. It isn't always fun. It could be lonely. It can be challenging. It doesn't mean you can't be with friends when you are able, just like I'm here with friends in this room, and Tamsin and Taro and Orla are there in a room together. And, you know, there is always going to be power and beauty and joy and comfort in being able to be in the company of friends, but one cannot be dependent upon it. It's a sad truth. One has to be dependent on one's own inner desire for truth more than anything else. And not just as an ideal to strive towards, but as the keystone of your practice. Your own desire for truth. Your own desire to go home. That can give you what you need to help reinforce the self-determination one needs at this time, the perseverance one needs at this time, and the container one needs at this time. Yes, it is done in conjunction with many other things, but those other things won't work if you are relying on somebody else to take responsibility for your own spiritual journey. It won't work. You have to take responsibility. You have to take responsibility for what it means to be a mystic now. And know that you have to do the work without the support maybe you once had. So that is one piece, is recognizing how much rests on your own shoulders. But also maybe it can be freeing to know what is required. I always find that in myself. When you know what is asked of you, in some ways it can be freeing because there is less confusion. It's like if you think you will only go back to God if you are given all of these things and then not actually focus on what is most important, then it's a confusing road. Clarity comes from actually knowing from what is required of you. take that desire that drew you to the mystical journey, to embody it to its fullest potential, not dependent upon anyone except the honoring of that desire to return home. And let that be your guide. One is reliant on the path, one is reliant on the teacher, but one cannot only, especially as one makes the first steps along the journey, as you go through this process that we talked about all these many months, of getting rid of the self, of growing up, of slowly transitioning from a space of being dominated by the ego to being in a place of full relationship with one's higher self and living from that awareness. One cannot achieve that purely by the grace of the path and the teacher. Maybe if we were all in one room together, day in and day out, like it was in my childhood. People came to Mrs. Tweedy's home, came to our home, sat there for hours on end, engulfed in the energy of the tradition that she embodied. And in India before her, and for the many hundreds of years, that functioned like that. But if you can't do that, you have to take the responsibility upon yourself. And you cannot blame the situation that is unfolding around you as an excuse for not doing that. That is another key piece to this. Because it is so easy, even when times are good, to find excuses why one cannot take full responsibility for oneself. So now you've got even more options. Well, I can't fly, I can't go on retreat, I can't see the teacher, you know, so much toxicity in the air, I'm overwhelmed by all the trauma that I'm experiencing directly and indirectly. I'm not trying to belittle this. These are all truths that are very challenging, but they cannot be excuses, because then what chance do we have? What chance do we have if the excuses take us away from our goal? Again, recognizing the reality of the situation, recognizing and being truthful about what is unfolding. Not letting one be swayed away from one's goal because it feels too daunting. Because if you really want to make the journey in this lifetime, if that's what you really want, it is like there should be nothing that stands in your way. When the moth returns with the flame, it doesn't say like, well, you know, the hand that is swatting me away is an excuse not to return to the flame, you know? It just keeps going, it keeps going, it keeps going, regardless of what the obstacle is. And if that means death, then the moth dies. Maybe that's an extreme example, but it's like, we have to be honest. We have to be truthful about what it takes. And it takes everything. It took everything before when times were easier. It took everything then. And it takes everything now when times are harder. So one must be honest about the situation, what it requires. To take stock. Because there is strength there. Through honesty, one can find the strength of that first turned your heart, that first awakened you. It's like we always have to go back to that space, that first moment, because in there lies everything. That realization that this world that we thought was everything is in fact just a reflection, a veil, a poor imitation of what really lies at the center of everything. And if one wants that bad enough, nothing gets in your way. You need a container, you need a teacher, you need a path, you need practices, you need support along the journey, sure. We all need all of those things, but we need the truthful self-determination, that desire to return to the truth that lies at the core of one's own being, and through that, a gateway into a much larger dimension of reality. And that climate change, or grounded flights, or pandemics, or the insecurity of what it might mean to live in this reality with children and so on and so forth are not going to stand in your way. That regardless of the outer circumstances, you want to return home in this lifetime. Because now it really matters. Maybe you won't get the same chances you had before. It will become harder and harder and harder. My father used to say that, you know, if you don't make this step in this reality, this incarnation, and really realize what is your full potential as a human being. And he was speaking to his students about this, you know, that, you know, so you are reincarnated again. But when you are reincarnated, it'll be a very different reality in the next 100, 200, 300 years. Be much harder to find a teacher, to find a path. And I think he was, of course, using this as, you know, a bit of the carrot to encourage people to really take responsibility for themselves. But there is also truth there, that it is going to be harder and harder and harder in the future. Perhaps we won't be able to fly at all. Perhaps you won't be able to go very far. Perhaps there won't be a teacher in the village next to you like there was for all those centuries in the East. A real teacher. There are so few real teachers. We recognize this reality, this truth. Nothing will stand in our way. That can be a very powerful mantra. Nothing will stand in our way. We have an opportunity now, so let's take it. And I think you know me well enough that I'm really not so interested in the long run, first few years, sure, of working with people who aren't really interested in taking full advantage of the opportunity that they have in this life to fulfill their desire to return home. That I will always honor, I'll always respect. You know, I'm not sure what I want, you know, fine for a little while, but after a while, you know, who is it serving? Especially in times like these. It's hard enough on a good day. I've always tried to be honest and truthful about what I expect and what I want from all of you who are serious about following this path. And I've always tried to be truthful about what I see as the challenges unfolding around us. And now I hope that this experience, this pandemic, has perhaps made you open your eyes a little wider as well to see that it isn't just talk. Maybe now you know a little bit of what will be required of you. Start to get that sense, real sense, embodied that sense. Some of you may have made tremendous steps during this time, because you can make a step when you are forced to stand on your own and some of you have not and struggled. That is okay. That is the nature of the experience. But just because you faltered now doesn't mean you can't pick yourself up again and start to walk along this road with a true full awareness of what is required. It isn't like, you know, a fun pep talk, you know, mysticism in the Anthropocene, what's required, we can all do it, we can come together and it's going to be okay. It isn't that. But I know in my own self, in my own journey, and I know from working with people and being around this work my whole life, that there is tremendous opportunity for growth and deepening when one actually is shown the reality of the situation. It's like all the bullshit can go off to the sides. You know, it doesn't mean that the work changes. You still have to go through the process of dealing with yourself, facing your demons, overcoming your shadows, or going through the process of purification. You know, again, all these things we've gone through in detail these many months. That work continues. But perhaps you can recognize what doesn't matter and what does. You know, that is a very powerful lesson. And it's a very powerful lesson this pandemic has shown us. And it has had tremendous ripple effects around the world. And I'm not just speaking for us as mystics, you know, on the human level. What matters? Love. It matters. You know, so many people have experienced that. Reorganizing their entire lives, realizing so much of their lives were meaningless. What really mattered was something else. And the mystic, they have to take that even further. Take the commitment, take the drive that drew you to want to take this journey to begin with and put it in full throttle. Because it requires that constant, constant, constant attention, a constant foot on the gas pedal. If we are going to drive through all this constant uncertainty and toxicity and change. And of course, there are many, many qualities, and I will elaborate upon this in much more detail over the coming months, qualities that the mystic has and can develop that have been always part of the mystical journey that can serve us so well at this time. Just like when, and again, I've used this example before, when Genghis Khan came down the plains and the Sufi masters, students came to him and said, Genghis Khan is coming. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And the teacher turned to his students and said, I taught you how to be ducks. Now swim. It's like, there are aspects that are so key to what it means to be a mystic, to go through the process of a mystical journey that can help one deal with the world that we live in. You know, that so simplicity, for example, both inner and outer simplicity, are not just ideals to strive towards, but are ways of living outwardly at a time where there is so much uncertainty and relying on complicated things is just not a good idea, to simplify one's life. And also the inner simplicity that is needed so that one can clear the clutter that is can be so easily accumulated inwardly so that one does not deviate from one's goal. Perseverance, which I've just spoken about. Patience, love, joy. Can go on and on. These are qualities which can help as we deal with this, as we step deeper and deeper into the reality that is unfolding around us. So we do not get lost within it, so we do not let it overcome. So that we can continue the journey in the midst of all of it, regardless. And then there is the other side, which is the responsibility and the role that mystics are playing at this time. And as I have spoken about these last few months, the mystic has always had a role and played a responsibility. Played a role and had a responsibility. No, through the relationship directly with Source, we are able to reflect the light of creation in this world. That has always been part of the mystical journey, the role that a mystic has, to live in a state of remembrance, a state of prayer and absorption, living one's life fully connected to the divine, embodying that in all the different realities the human being is capable of. That has always played a role of honoring the secret of creation. So that is always present in one's practice. It is not purely about you. That is the mystical secret that one begins to understand more and more and more as the journey unfolds. Experience how the in-breath and out-breath are not really about you at all. You are part of it. The prayer is not really about you at all. You are part of it. Silence is not really about you at all. You are part of it. You learn this. You experience this. And you see what part you play. It's always been there. And now it is more important than ever. As I said before, there are not many of us left. There's this great irony that here in the era of spirituality, in every shape or form, one click away, there is so little truth in the midst of that. There used to be, as I said, you know, the teacher in the next village. How many monasteries were there in Tibet? How many shamans held a relationship with the depths of their traditions and the living world and the spirits that existed? How much has been taken away? So much. There are so few of us. And so it's like the responsibility is even greater to embody the potential that we have. Not for our own sakes, not purely for our own journey, but for what that reflection offers and holds the world, for the world. And as this society, this global society crumbles over the next few decades, there is a need to help try to reconnect. Not just through the honoring that is present within a mystic's heart by living connected to divine presence, but to consciously embody that in how we live our lives so that there can be a more direct way of contributing to the sacred. There is a responsibility we have at this time to do that. And that can be done in so many different ways. It isn't in any way that we have this mission that we can grapple with and hold on to as some sort of task That's not what I'm saying at all. There's always a danger there. It is more that we recognize that there is a tremendous need at this time. So much has been lost. And that if we are devoting our lives to truth, again, not for our sake, but for the divine sake, then it is our responsibility to try to be of service to the divine as much as we can be, in a way that aligns with who we are as individuals. And that doesn't mean we go out and find new jobs and we try and all become environmental activists. I think in truth, we are all, or should be, some degree of environmental activists by this point. You know, that's what it means to be an awake human being at this time, to be a morally aware human being at this time, to live simply, to be aware of what needs to change, to try to not contribute as much as we can without harming the earth. I mean, these are all such simple, simple, basic things. But honoring the sacred. You know, just as we walk when we do the zikr, there is so much that can be offered there. There is a role that that practice plays, just like there is a role that the practices of all the other traditions that are trying to do the same thing we are play. So that maybe when there is a shift that begins to unfold in 50, 100 years, there is a thread that has been kept alive. There is a note that has been sung this whole time that has not been forgotten. There is a connection that is present that has not been lost. And whatever emerges from the ashes of this civilization will hold a connection that has existed for thousands of years. It has not been broken. The mystic has always helped keep that thread alive, has always sung that note. That is our duty. It wouldn't matter how much of an outer contribution we made if we didn't include that note in our daily practice, that remembrance of the sacred that lies at the heart of creation, that can be something that is included in every breath we take. With every step that we take, the mystic must include that in everything, and then that's all that matters. Because all the things we will do outwardly will be natural things that are practical, living simply. So much will change over the coming years. We will adjust because we are aligned enough to know what we have to shift. But honoring that note, being in a state of remembrance as we go through this process, that is so precious.